Okay, I believe we are ready to start. This is a joint meeting between the City of Florence, City Council, and the Lane County Board of Commissioners. I'm about ready to call this meeting to order, but before we begin, I would, first of all, like everybody to turn off your cell phones if you have any. And secondly, I would like to see a show of hands of the people who intend to offer testimony tonight so that I can kind of gauge time. Three. Okay, so I have two names up here. That's Jeff McGill and Dave...
Jager.
Jager?
Yes.
Okay, and then Leah?
Leah.
Okay, so only three that really came prepared to testify. All right, so I would really like to keep that testimony to around 5 minutes for each of you. So if you would please pay attention to that and maybe edit as you go along so that we could keep that on track, I would appreciate it very much. All right, so if everybody will please stand, we will have the pledge. Commissioner Bozovich, will you lead us, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. For the benefit of the audience, we'll do the roll call by self-introductions. I'm Nola Xavier, and I'm the mayor. And we'll start down here and have each of the city councilors introduce themselves, and then we will move over to the commissioners.
Joe Henry.
Brian Jago.
Sue Wilbridge.
Joshua Green.
Jay Bozovich, and I'd like to officially call the Board of Commissioners back into session. We were recessed earlier today.
Faye Stewart.
Pat Farr.
Okay, and then we have some staff here tonight, our consultant, who will be the staff presenter, and then we have some city staff. So Carol Henkel.
Carol Henkel, planning consultant, project coordinator.
Okay.
Kelly Weiss, interim planning director.
Mike Miller, public works director.
Jack DeBett, city manager.
Here, Miller, I'm from Lane County.
And Stephen Borges with the Lane County Office of Public Works.
Okay, thank you all very much. Councilors, if you have a chance to look at the agenda, I would entertain a motion to accept the agenda as presented. Okay. Motion by Councilor Jago, second by Councilor Roberts. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. So, I've got a script up here. We want to be sure that we do this according to all of the codes. So the first thing is public comment. This is just a regular public comment, which is for members of the audience to bring to our attention anything that is not on the agenda for tonight. Is there anyone who has just general public comment they wish to make? Yes? Would you come forward, please, and put your name on the... If you'd please speak directly into the microphone, we have some people who wear hearing aids, and that microphone makes it much easier for them.
How's that?
Great.
Wonderful. This is just something really small. It's just to bring to your attention in the future something you'll...
Your name first, please.
Oh, it's Jeff Ashmead.
Okay.
Lived there on Collard Lake Road, just outside of town.
Okay.
It's just to bring your attention to things that come in the future for you folks. Like you, I get all kinds of things, emails, and some are reputable and some are not. Some are like really conspiracies. But this, I looked this up and it was pretty interesting. It's for the establishment of the National Blue Ways System.
Blue Way?
Blue Ways. And I just have here, it's the memorandum that's been sent out. And it's to have a healthy communities and healthy watersheds, and it's set up by the federal government. And I guess they're going from state to state, and they're initiating this. And it's just to let you folks know that it exists. And then they work with private partnerships, and here's one with the Wildlife Refuge Association. And then they enacted a plan, and then the federal government took it up, and then they enacted it for them. And then here's one example of resistance to it by a community that didn't want it to happen. Because what they did is they, like in this one instance, they took over the White River, which is a 700 mile long that goes through like Missouri. And then they had like all these designations for what can be done, what cannot be done. And it really has potential to encroach on people's property rights, what can and cannot be done, fishing, farming, and the so on and so forth. Anyways, it's when you're going against the federal government, maybe there isn't anything you can do, but maybe you can find ways to work with people when you're up against them and, you know, at least have it go to your favor to a degree. That's all. Where do I leave this?
If you leave it right there with Kelly Weiss, who's our city recorder.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Yes.
I'll make sure they get it.
All right, is there any other public comment? If not, we will then move on to the joint city-county public hearing. So I am going to read this. This is a joint public hearing for the City of Florence and Lane County Board of Commissioners to consider amendments to the Florence Comprehensive Plan policies that apply outside the city within the Florence urban growth boundary. No county code regulations are proposed. After the public hearing concerning areas outside the city limits but inside the urban growth boundary, the Florence City Council will be considering a proposal to amend the Florence Comprehensive Code and the city code text. So the agenda item is the Siuslaw Estuary Partnership Ordinance 2, Series 2013, and Lane County Ordinance number PA-1299. The Lane County Ordinance number PA-1299 would amend the comprehensive plan text to adopt an updated wetlands and riparian inventory, an aquifer protection plan, and related policies that apply outside the city within the Florence urban growth boundary. No county code regulations are proposed. The City Ordinance number 2, Series 2013, would co-adopt these amendments and also adopt amendments to the City Code to comply with statewide planning goals for wetlands and riparian areas and groundwater resources, including a drinking water protection overlay zone to apply to the use and storage of hazardous materials within the drinking water protection area for the city's proposed drinking water well field. The proposals also include housekeeping amendments to the comprehensive plan and the city code. These proceedings will be recorded. These hearings will be held in accordance with the land use procedures required by the city and the state of Oregon. Prior to the hearings tonight, staff will identify the applicable substantive criteria, which have also been listed in the staff report. These are the criteria the city council and the county board must use in making its decision. All testimony and evidence must be directed toward these criteria or in the plans or land use regulations which you believe applies to the decision per ORS 197.763 parentheses 5. Failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the city council and the parties involved an opportunity to respond to the issue would preclude an appeal based on that issue. Prior to the conclusion of the initial evidentiary hearing, any participant may request an opportunity to present additional evidence, arguments, or testimony regarding the application. failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the city, county, and parties involved an opportunity to respond to the issue would preclude an appeal based on that issue. You must comment either in writing or verbally during a public hearing in order to have standing on an appeal. Any proponent, opponent, or other party interested in a land use matter to be heard by the council and board may challenge the qualifications of any councillor or board member to participate in such hearing and decision. Such challenges must state facts relied upon by the party relating to the councillor or commissioner's bias, prejudgment, personal interest, or other facts from which the party has concluded that the council or the board would not make a decision in an impartial manner. Does any councillor or board member wish to declare a conflict of interest or bias? No. Does any member of the public wish to challenge a councillor or board member impartiality? Okay. I will now then open the public hearing for this agenda item for the City of Florence. It is 5:43. Commissioner Bozovich, would you like to open the meeting for the Lane County Board of Commission?
Yes, as Vice Chair for the Lane County Board of Commissioners, I'd like to open the Lane County Board hearing.
Thank you. May we now please have the staff report?
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Good evening, members of the council, members of the board. The subject of tonight's public hearing are products of a long process. The Siuslaw Estuary Partnership, which has been going on for more than 3 years in the city. I have a lot of slides here, and I'm going to try and touch on everything and hope that if there are questions, we'll come back to it. I know that the council and the board have already seen a lot of this, and these are for the benefit of the audience. But if there are questions, we have them here, and we can come back to it in detail. So as you all know, the project was guided by an interdisciplinary team of 19 federal, state, tribal, and local agencies. There was an elected officials stakeholder group and a community stakeholder group that provided comment throughout this last 3 years on all of the products. And these are the agencies that were involved, and I'm not going to name them all, but you can get a sense of the breadth of the involvement, and they were very involved throughout this process. The project was funded by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Excuse me, Carol, if I can interrupt for a second. Legal counsel's advised me that I need to read the ordinance into the record for the county hearing before we get much further to make sure everything's legal. So I just want to say that I'm opening the public hearing for ordinance number PA-1299. In the matter of adopting amendments to the Florence Realization 2020 Comprehensive Plan for aquifer protection and wetlands and riparian corridors and for housekeeping and internal consistency and adopting a severability clause. Thank you.
And with a match from project partners. The mission is to protect and improve water quality and fish and wildlife habitat in the Lower Siuslaw watershed. There's been a project website that's been up and running for the entire process. And the project started in October of 2009, and we're scheduled to complete it by September 30th of this year. There's been these three different phases over the last 3 years. There's been a lot of process during this time. There's been elected official check-ins, state agency coordination, and public outreach. There's been pretty extensive public outreach, including 3 general open houses with newsletters sent area-wide in advance of those that were very well attended. And in addition to that, we've had meetings with the council to check in with you on different policy direction for the wetland and riparian areas, the trail, and the aquifer protection plan. The council and the board concurred with an early draft of the Aquifer Protection Plan, and that was submitted for state certification in July. The state is prepared to certify the draft that you have, the proposed plan that you have before you tonight following adoption. And the state agencies have concurred with everything that you have in front of you tonight. We had meetings with all of those parties that are affected by these comprehensive plan and code amendments. We've met several times with the Coast Village Homeowners Association, most recently in October, the Board of Realtors, the Chamber of Commerce, the golf course owners, managers, the businesses and property owners in the drinking water protection areas, the property owners with wetlands and riparian areas, and the stakeholders. The key dates for this joint adoption process, the council initiated the amendments in April, and following a joint work session with the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission work session was on April 16th. The Planning Commission public hearing was on May 7th, and the Planning Commission's unanimously recommended the proposals before you. The Lane County Board had a work session on June 4th and a first reading of the ordinance on July 23rd. And then here we are tonight at the joint elected officials public hearing. Referrals were sent to all of the affected agencies on April 16th, and notice was sent, all of this notice was sent or posted or put in the newspapers for the May 7th Joint Planning Commission's public hearing notice. I won't read through all of these notices, they're in the staff report, but we can come back to it if there's a question. And all of this notice complies with state law and local policy and code. Likewise, we did notice in the Sayous Law News, the Register Guard, and property owner notification that's required, and notification of those who testified at the Planning Commission meeting of tonight's public hearing. So as Mayor indicated, there are really almost two public hearings tonight. There's the joint public hearing, which is on Exhibit B, the comprehensive plan amendments, and then that would involve both the city and the county board. And then following that joint public hearing, the city will continue their public hearing on Exhibit C, the city code amendments. So this is starting now with a joint city-county public hearing on Exhibit B, which is the comprehensive plan amendments. The comprehensive plan amendments are legislative, and they pertain to aquifer protection, wetland and riparian corridors, and housekeeping. And I'll just mention the housekeeping now. It's a text change to the comprehensive plan to change from 45 days to 35 days, the notice to DLCD, Department of Land Conservation and Development, in keeping with the change in state law. This is just a synopsis of Exhibit B, the comprehensive plan amendments. They do not apply outside the Florence urban growth boundary. They do not affect or change current annexation policy of the city. They are mandated by and or implement state law, particularly statewide planning goal 5 and Oregon administrative rules for the Department of Environmental Quality and Oregon Health Authority, except where noted, local option. So what do these amendments do? They bring the comprehensive plan into compliance with the three steps in statewide planning goal 5 for wetlands, riparian areas, and groundwater resources. Those three steps are inventory and assessment, significance, and protection. So again, this makes the city's comprehensive plan compliant with those three steps. For groundwater resources, it completes all three steps. And for wetlands and riparian areas, it completes all three steps as far as the city's comprehensive plan and city code is concerned. This is small print. There's a lot of criteria. And if you've read the staff report, those members of the public, you'll see that the findings are pretty lengthy because we needed to demonstrate compliance with all of this these criteria. I'll just really briefly read through these. The Florence Comprehensive Plan, Florence City Code, Title 10, Zoning Regulations, Chapter 1, these sections that are listed here, Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapters 196, 197, 215-227, and all of the sections that are named there of those chapters. Statewide land use planning goals and associated administrative rules. Goal 1, citizen involvement. Goal 2, land use. And goal 5 is shown there in blue because this is primarily what we're doing tonight. Is the goal 5, natural resources, scenic and historic areas and open spaces. Goal 6, air, water, and land resources quality. Goal 7, areas subject to natural hazards. Goal 9, economic development. Goal 10, housing. Goal 11, public facilities and services. 12, transportation. 16, estuarine resources. And 17, coastal shorelands. In terms of administrative rules, it's Oregon Administrative Rules Chapters 660 and 141 and 333 and 340, and these divisions that are listed here. This presentation will be included in the record and attached to the minutes of tonight's proceeding. The Lane County Rural Comprehensive Plan Policies, Part 1, Section D, and Lane Code Sections 12. 0.005, 050, 14300, and 16.400. So Exhibit B, remember there's two parts, aquifer protection and wetlands and riparian. This is the aquifer protection portion. What is being requested is to adopt an aquifer protection plan as part of the comprehensive plan. Except for the contingency plan, the city ordinance does provide for the city to adopt the contingency plan, but not as part of the comprehensive plan because that portion is not technically land use. All of the management strategies in the plan apply to the city of Florence. Only some of the management strategies apply to Lane County. Adopt the OHA, Oregon Health Authority, certified drinking water protection delineations and delineation report as part of the comprehensive plan. The city will use that, you'll see this acronym a lot, DWPA, drinking water protection area, for the proposed well field for reference for the overlay zone, and that's only city. Adopt comprehensive plan policies for compliance with statewide planning goal 5. This should be familiar to everyone by now. This is the delineations that have been certified by the Oregon Health Authority. The aquifer protection plan contains prioritized strategies to protect the aquifer and surface water. There are three categories: aquifer-wide, strategies for the existing well field, and strategies for the proposed well field. The strategies are prioritized as high, medium, or low. High priority, they're already being done, and or they can be implemented immediately. The resources are there, and the staff are there to do that. Medium, if there's requirement to need some lead time, and that's something that would take a couple of years to get up and running. And low would be to implement that as time and financial resources are available. In other words, if you have to apply for a grant or otherwise obtain resources to complete the strategy. So for aquifer-wide, obviously it's the whole aquifer, so it affects all land uses, all different types of land uses. And the four strategies are surface and groundwater monitoring, public education, coordination, integrated pest management. For the existing well field, the land uses are residential, private, open space, and public. So that means those are the types of land uses that exist and are planned in the capture zones or the delineated area for the existing well field. And those are 8 different strategies. And you can see here that these strategies are pretty non-regulatory for the most part. They're public education and outreach, monitoring, working with the realtors, targeting integrated pest management efforts to that area, working with homeowners association, working with golf course managers, monitoring the sewer lines, and except for number 5, which is to adopt comprehensive plan policies and code amendments, which we'll be talking about tonight. The proposed well field, the land uses affected there are residential, commercial, industrial, private, open space, and public. And you can see they're very similar to the strategies for the existing well field, with the exception that of number 6, to adopt a drinking water protection overlay zone, and 7, inventory and rank chemicals used, and 8, provide business assistance. 6, 7, and 8 all work together. Essentially, the way that program works, and we'll get into that in part 2 of tonight's hearing, we'll get into that in detail about how all of that is implemented at the city level. I'm not going to read through these, but I want to make everyone aware that this is the length and breadth of the strategies that pertain to Lane County. Lane County Board has seen these. We've provided them to them in writing, and the Lane County Planning Commission also saw them as well. So these are the particular management strategies that apply to Lane County. Now, this is what you're being asked to adopt tonight, these comprehensive plan policies in Exhibit B. And there's been a lot of discussion about how these relate to state law, how these, you know, which ones are just the city, which ones are just the county. So to make this hopefully simple for everyone, where the typeface shows as yellow, it's both the city and the county that are being asked to adopt that policy. Where it's shown in red, that means it's up to the city and the county to decide whether or not to do that. In other words, it's not a state mandate. So when you see the red, you'll know that's a local option. So one, the city shall implement the recommendations of the stormwater management plan regarding protection of the aquifer for the city's well fields. So that's in white because doesn't pertain to the county, and it's an existing policy. Number two, the city shall implement the aquifer protection plan for the North Florence Silsoe-Stunel aquifer as amended and certified by DEQ and OHA. And this is something that is required by Goal 5 and state law, so that is not shown as a local option. So hopefully that's working for folks. Number three is Lane County and the city. All portions of the aquifer protection plan except the contingency plan are adopted as a supporting document to the comprehensive plan because both the city and the county will adopt it. And it'll be in Appendix 5. Four, both city and county will be asked to adopt this, the delineations report as part of the comprehensive plan. And that would also serve as the drinking water source inventory for the city of Florence, and the maps for the proposed were adopted as part of the comprehensive plan. So basically, this is adopting what is required by Goal 5. And the city shall use the map of the delineated drinking water protection area for the proposed well field as a reference map for the drinking water protection overlay zone. So that portion is not pertaining to Lane County. Number five, city and county, the drinking water protection area for the existing well field is a significant groundwater resource as that term is defined by statewide planning Goal 5. And this is a state requirement, and it is exactly almost word for word out of Goal 5. The drinking water protection area, including all time and travel zones for the proposed well field, shall be protected through application of statewide planning Goal 2, land use, Goal 6, and Goal 11. And that's for the proposed well field. Number six, this one is not required to be in the comprehensive plan. It implements state law and complies with Goal 5 to protect the aquifer from septic systems. It is not new policy. It is existing state policy, and it's being proposed as part of the comprehensive plan so that everyone is informed about this requirement in state law. Prior to issuing new or replacement septic permits, Lane County shall request the city to inform the county in writing whether municipal wastewater service is physically and legally available as those terms are defined in state law. This is something that the city and the county do now. It is something where they cooperate on this. It has no effect on annexation policy of the city. There's been questions about that from various places, from various people, and we've tried to consistently answer that. The two coexist, but one, this policy does not affect city annexation policy. Similar situation with number seven. Consistent with the policies in the comprehensive plan, the city shall implement state law that requires the city to provide municipal wastewater services at the time new or replacement septic system permit is applied for, if the municipal service is physically and legally available, as prescribed in comprehensive plan policies and administrative rules. Again, not required to be part of the comp plan. It is in state law. The city and the county have no choice but to do this, or the city has no choice but to do this, and it does comply with Goal 5 to protect the aquifer from septic systems. This is the reason for having it in the comprehensive plan or proposing it to be in the comprehensive plan. Again, it does not affect annexation policy because as it stands, the city does not force annexation. So that means that today, if the sewer service, if a person does not want to annex to the city, then the sewer service is not legally available, because the city has an adopted resolution saying that the city will not force annexation. So a person has to agree to annex in order to get the sewer service. So that policy exists separate from this requirement. This requirement has to do with the Department of Environmental Quality's law related to septic systems and municipal wastewater services. Number 8 is a local option. And this particular policy is proposed because it was felt that this would be a good thing to do. This has to do with dense non-aqueous phase liquids, DINAPLs. And DINAPLs, as we've all talked about many times, they don't break down in water. So even if those chemicals get put into the well field pretty far out, even 30 years out, it could potentially destroy that source, and it would be extremely expensive to remediate. And so for DINAPLs, the policy approach that's taken generally is avoidance. And so what this policy would do is allow for the city and county staff to work together to inform property owners that want to develop in the time of travel zone up to 20 years for the proposed well field, that the city would then provide information to them about the use of DINAPLs, what they do, and what are some alternatives. So it's just a cooperation. Again, putting it in the comprehensive plan puts everyone on notice that this is important to do, and it raises the level of importance of this. The second part of Exhibit B are wetlands and riparian corridors. The purpose is to bring the city into compliance with statewide planning goal 5, update the 1997 wetland and riparian inventory. As you all know, there's an existing 97 inventory that's adopted as part of the comprehensive plan. Provide a comprehensive functional assessment of wetlands and riparian areas. Protect significant resources, primarily for water quality and flood control, and address conflicting uses through a limited protection program. The number 5 is really the crux of what is being proposed as far as protection is concerned, to modify existing city code requirements to better fit the Florence environment, respect the rights of property owners, and address the need to provide public facilities. And when we get into the code discussion, we'll focus in on what that does, how that actually happens here. So just real quickly, Florence Wetlands, the Goal 5 process, 3 steps: inventory, assessment, and protection measures. The protection measures are the code. That's part 2 of the public hearing. The local wetland inventory would be as part of tonight's, regardless of tonight's action, the local wetland inventory is already now part. It's been approved by the Department of State Lands. It's already part of the statewide wetland inventory. So the Department of State Lands is already using that inventory as, to identify wetlands. And the city and county, the proposal is for the city and county to adopt the wetlands and riparian inventory for the area within the UGB as part of the comprehensive plan. As you know, there are 34 grouped wetlands greater than 1/2 acre in 620 total acres, and they break down thus in these different types of wetlands. The assessment is for hydrologic function, flood control, water quality, fish support, aquatic support, and terrestrial habitat. These are the significant wetlands in the Florence urban growth boundary. The Goal 5 process is similar for riparian areas. We break it down into 4 steps here, but it's basically the same: inventory, assessment, significance, and protection measures. The riparian corridors in the Florence urban growth boundary were divided into 17 riparian reaches in the following 5 basins: Munsell Creek, Rhododendron Drive, Airport, Cedar Beach, and North Fork Siuslaw. In terms of the inventory, this is a slightly different from the wetlands. In terms of the riparian inventory, GO5 allows for in terms of the inventory portion, to use either a safe harbor or a standard approach. The safe harbor is a 50-foot setback in the case of a creek like Munsell Creek, and it only applies to fish-bearing streams. So Munsell Creek is the only fish-bearing stream in the inventory. The city has, for many, many, many years, provided a 50-foot setback from Munsell Creek. So this continues that, basically. It doesn't change that. The standard inventory approach was used for the other reaches, and as it has to by state law. The assessment, similar to wetlands, water quality, flood management, thermal regulation is a little different. That is the trees and vegetation that provides shade and adds humidity, cooling the water and providing habitat for juvenile fish and wildlife habitat, just as it is for wetlands. These are the significant riparian reaches within the Florence urban growth boundary. So there, in terms of protection, I'm just going to mention this because there, the plan would be adopted as part of the aquifer protect, I mean, as part of the comprehensive plan, but it is implemented in city code. So the way this will, I'll get into a lot of detail on this in the second portion of the public hearing tonight when we talk about city code, because the protection measures are in city code, not in the comprehensive plan. So in state law, you can have, for protection, you can use a safe harbor approach or an ESEE site-specific approach, or you can do a combination. And what is proposed tonight as part of the city code amendments that we'll talk about in part two of the public hearing is a combination of the safe harbor to protect significant and wetlands and riparian reaches in the city limits. In other words, to prohibit development and allow setback adjustments, exemptions, and variances allowed in state law. The ESEE approach was used for public infrastructure and significant wetlands and to address conflicts between existing development and significant riparian resources along the Munsell Creek side channel. And that area, it concerns Coast Village and Florentine Estates, although, as you know, Florentine Estates is already grandfathered in because they were already granted the exemption by the Planning Commission. So, comprehensive plan amendments, the city is requested to adopt the inventory, the wetlands and riparian inventory, the significant wetlands and riparian corridors plan, and comprehensive plan policies. The county is requested to co-adopt the inventory, the plan, and then some of the comprehensive plan policies, policies 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and the second paragraph of that. The remaining policies and city code amendments apply only within the Florence city limits and are therefore not subject to co-adoption by Lane County. So here we are again, yellow, Lane County and city, red, local option. For the purposes of land planning and initial wetland and riparian identification, the city and Lane County shall rely on the inventory, the 2013 inventory, and it is physically located in Appendix 5, required by state law. Number two, disturbance of significant wetlands shall be permitted only as determined by the permitted provisions of the DSL, again, required by state law. Number three, in accordance with ORS, the city and county shall notify DSL when wetlands are present on a property. The city and shall notify DSL when riparian areas are present on a property that is subject to a local land use or building permit approval. That portion in red there is a local option. That was proposed because the staff felt that it was important to connect folks with DSL, and no one really objected to that, including the Planning Commission. They agreed with it. So that is a local option, though. You're not required by state law to notify DSL when it's riparian. So number four, again, required by state law, the city and county shall consider formal wetland delineation reports as a valid source of wetland information. So in other words, if there's a delineation done on a wetland and DSL approves it, the city has to use that information. No significant wetland or riparian corridor shall be drained by rerouting of natural drainage ways, and that's an existing policy in the city comprehensive plan. Now, this policy, I know it's a long-winded one, but it basically says that the city pertains to the city and that the city shall protect the riparian corridors and wetlands for these functions and values, and in accordance with both Planning Goal 5 and the ESEE analysis. Now, the ESEE analysis, the city was not required to do that. The city did that because during this process, this public outreach process, we all became aware that there were conflicts along that side channel. And also, there was a desire for the city to address the conflicts between existing wetlands and the planned public facilities. So it made sense to do that, and it was a good tool for the city to use to address that, and it allowed for the limited protection program that we'll talk about in part two of the public hearing. So the ESEE analysis has to be adopted as part of the comprehensive plan, and that because the city and the county are both adopting that, those comprehensive plan amendments, it pertains to both, and the program exempts public infrastructure from wetland protection measures, so, and then allows special setback reductions and other allowances for development along the Munsell Creek side channel. Again, not required by state law. It was a local option. So number seven, the city shall include a procedure in the code to consider hardship variances, claims of map error, and reduction or removal of the restrictions for any existing lot or parcel demonstrated to have been rendered unbuildable by the application of the significant wetlands and riparian areas standards and code. This pertains to the city, not the county. It's the city code provision that we'll talk about in phase, in part two of the public hearing, but it is a requirement in state law. So it's a requirement in goal five to have this in the comprehensive plan. Number eight, the city shall encourage restoration and protection of privately owned wetlands and riparian areas through code incentives, and as resources allow, through education in partnership with the Soyuz Low Watershed Council and the Soil and Water Conservation District. Number eight is a local option. It's there in red. You don't have to do it. It was felt that it would be a good thing to do, and the Planning Commission agreed. So that's really your choice as to whether or not you would do that. And the code provisions in part two that we'll talk about in part two do include incentives. Policy nine is a plan amendment option. It's not required by state law, but it's allowed by state law. And what this does, policy number nine does, and it would apply to the city and the county, if any property owner, and this would obviously apply to more property, bigger properties where they have a big investment at stake, if their property is considered significant and either things have changed or the property owner disagrees, they can hire an expert to come in and do the analysis at the ESEE level to make a case that it shouldn't be significant because of the conflicts that exist. And again, that's a local option. So the conclusion is that the comprehensive plan amendments in Exhibit B are consistent with the Florence Comprehensive Plan, City Code, Lane County Rural Comprehensive Plan, Lane Code, Oregon Revised Statutes, Statewide Planning Goals, and Associated Administrative Rules. The Joint Planning Commission's unanimous recommendation for Exhibit B was to adopt the Comprehensive Plan Amendments in Exhibit B, subject to the following condition of approval: that prior to adoption, the 2013 wetlands and riparian inventory is approved by DSL and includes modifications approved by DSL. And this is required by state law that the DSL approve the inventory before it's adopted locally. At the time of the Planning Commission public hearing, there were several property owners with wetlands in concerning wetland number one, and they questioned that boundary. So the way the timing worked out, the DSL staff person couldn't come down until May 9th, and so we made it a condition of approval. And Peter from DSL did come down, met with those three sets of property owners. They all looked at the wetlands together, and they came up with changes to the boundaries on that wetland. And those changes have now been incorporated into the version of the 2013 inventory that you're being requested to adopt tonight and that DSL has approved. Requested action is for the City Council at the end of this portion of the public hearing to just do a straw vote to say whether you agree with the comprehensive plan amendments, and for the County Board to actually go ahead and adopt the ordinance. I think that's concludes my comments.
Okay, thank you very much, Carol. So, at this point, councilors, do you have any questions for Ms. Hinkle? No? Okay. County commissioners, do you have any questions?
I'm calling yourself.
Yeah, I have one, or two, I guess. So I received some email correspondence recently, and there's some concern about a map that was presented on May 7th by Mr. Miller. And from the descriptions in the emails, it sounded like it was the wellhead, wellfield time travel delineation map that was presented and had some arrows about water flow, which disconcerted some people because it did not match up with the 1982 aquifer study that showed the natural flow of water. And, you know, being a civil engineer is sometimes dangerous. I know enough about this that one is the natural flow of the aquifer. The other one was under stress, because that's how you do well field, you know, time of travel delineations. You consider when the wells are being pumped, and it sometimes reverses flow of water. And that was what some of the emails were concerning. Is it possible, I don't know if you've got the two maps available to look at, or if Mr. Miller maybe can walk us through the differences between those maps that have some people concerned about the May 7th hearing in front of the joint planning commissions. Do you understand what I'm talking about, Mr. Miller?
Before Mike comes up, we did get emails also today from Leah Patton regarding that, so I'm assuming it's the same person. And we sent her the map of the flow from the 1982 Ralph Christensen report side by side with the map of the flow from the 2012 report by GSI Water Solutions. And I didn't bring it with me tonight. Did you bring it with you, Mike? But there is really, basically, the maps are pretty much the same. There's more detail in the 2012 map, and it's more sophisticated because, obviously, you know, mapping and modeling technology has evolved significantly in the last 30 years. But the flow doesn't really seem to be that different from what I could see. But, Mike, why don't you, since the question was addressed to you, let me turn this over to you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Sorry for dragging you into this, but it was specific to a presentation you apparently gave.
Yeah. So the only map that we have is the 82 map that shows direction of flow of the groundwater, and then, as Carol mentioned, a newer map that was done in 2012. Utilizing the information we have, it's more robust. Modeling has come forward in 30 years, and so there are small differences, but basically it's very much the same as far as the travel of the groundwater and the direction of flow for those areas. Now, when we get into and talking about the delineation of time of travel zones, that is different, although the time of travel zones do not have a map associated showing the direction of flow under those stressed conditions of where the water would be coming from. It's generic, showing an area of where the water would be coming from to feed the different wells.
Okay, I think I understand. And just to kind of remind people, in 1981 I received my degree in engineering, so that's how long ago that previous, and believe me, the technology then, my TI-51A that I bought for engineering school cost me almost $300, and it was a brick that basically did some very basic trigonometric functions compared to what we have today in computing power. And one of my first jobs out of college was doing computer modeling for runoff, and what we have today for runoff modeling compared to when I graduated college is a far different set of calculations. I mean, you didn't do finite element analysis of aquifer like GSI would have done today versus what Ralph Christensen was doing back in 1982, so I understand there'd be some slight differences, and particularly in more detail, because you have the computing power to get to some other, as you do those element analysis, you can make smaller and smaller blocks because you can deal with larger and larger databases. So they do tend to get more detail. So I just wanted to bring that up because it was a concern that was emailed to me. And I understand sometimes, you know, for a layman, you know, just looking at, there's a difference between the maps, there must be something fishy.
Sure.
And it's not necessarily always something fishy. It might be just that we have better technology and better calculating today. So I appreciate that. There's also some concern about timeline and ability, and this is not necessarily for you, Mr. Miller, it's more for Carol, and whether there is sufficient time for the public to review everything and in the process that was also brought forward. I stepped in as a member of the elected officials stakeholders group when I was elected as county commissioner and sworn in January 2011 and suddenly became a part of this process. So I've been involved since 2011. I know it started well before that, but my understanding is the initial mapping for that went into all this that was submitted as drafts to DSL and to DLCD was in 2012. They were adopted by the council and the commission. So, you know, in summer of 2012, the drafts were done. And is there a significant difference between the drafts that were submitted and what we're looking at today?
No, and in fact, the differences had to do not with any of the data or maps. The changes that were made as a result of the public outreach process, that detailed public outreach process that I went through and explained, these meetings had to do with the management strategies, all of them. So basically, we met with the golf course owners, and they proposed what everyone considered, including DEQ, to be an improved strategy for one of the golf courses. So we made that change, and there were some other changes. Oh, one important change was originally there was a policy that was in the draft that was proposed, that was initiated by the council. There was a policy, comprehensive plan policy, that the city would require advanced septic systems in the drinking water protection areas outside the city limits, obviously, because that's where the septic systems are. But during the public outreach process, we discussed it. We became aware that that policy really didn't accomplish what we were hoping it would, that it really wouldn't protect the groundwater, because the only areas that couldn't be served by or were unlikely to be served by city, by municipal wastewater, were so far outside the, like, where they were in the 20-year time of travel zone. And the concern there is nitrates, and nitrates do break down in water. So people commented, we heard them, we took that policy out. And so those are the kind, or that strategy out. So those are the kind of changes that were made, but nothing having to do with data or maps.
Yeah. Thank you, I appreciate the background.
Okay. If that's all the questions from either the council or the commissioners, we will take testimony from those people who wish. Now, this testimony at this point, let me make this perfectly clear, is for this Exhibit B. The process for hearing on Exhibit C, which is the city codes that will be discussed, will be separate. This Exhibit B is for the joint hearing between the council and the commissioners. So that's the public testimony that we will take at this point. So I have three people signed up, but let me ask again. And first of all, are there any proponents, anybody who chooses to speak in favor of this exactly as it has